Welcome back, pizza enthusiasts, to another mouth-watering episode of 50 Tastes of Grey. I'm your host, Matthew Grey, and today we're deep diving into the world of pizza with the one and only Scott Wiener, founder of Scott's Pizza Tours. Established in 2008, Scott's Pizza Tours has been on a mission to explore every nook and cranny of New York City's pizza scene. Led by passionate experts, these tours are not just about indulging in delicious slices, but also uncovering the rich history, science, and culture behind each bite. From the iconic pizzerias of Manhattan to the hidden gems of Brooklyn, Scott's tours offer a unique and immersive experience for pizza lovers everywhere. Scott himself is a true pizza aficionado with a weekly limit of 15 slices. I don't believe that for a second, because I think he's eating it all the time, but that 15 slices apparently speaks volumes about his dedication to his craft. As a monthly columnist for Pizza Today magazine, host of Thrillist Really Dough, and Guinness World Record holder for the largest collection of pizza boxes, it's safe to say that Scott has turned his obsession into a successful lifestyle. During our conversation, Scott shares insights into the artistry of pizza making, the cultural significance of this beloved dish, and the fascinating stories behind some of New York City's most famous pizzerias. We also delve into Scott's personal journey from pizza enthusiast to industry leader, exploring the challenges and triumphs along the way. He also kiddingly made mention that there's a new baby in his family. Her name is Shelby, and that she enjoys tossing her broccoli onto the floor. Perhaps that's not one of her favorite pizza toppings, eh, Scott? Anyway, perhaps most impressively, I managed to stump Scott, the pizza god, with a few questions he's never been asked before, a rare feat for someone as knowledgeable and experienced as he is in the world of history of all things pizza. So whether you're a diehard pizza lover or just curious about the world of New York City's pizza culture, join us for this flavorful journey with the one and only Scott Wiener from Scott's Pizza Tours in New York City. What have you eaten today?
I do know that you asked that. And I love it because just while we were getting on the right Zoom link here, I ate some leftover roasted potatoes. Because, you know, like I'm always scrambling during the day and I'm always shoveling something into my mouth.
Right.
And then going back in time slightly, I was just in Manhattan a couple of hours ago and I was walking past this place, this pizza place, that I had never been to. It's pretty new. And I said, I had to try it. It's called Tonda. And I had a quick pizza. It's almost like a pizza Impala, like a puffy pizza that you bake twice. And it was with mortadella and stracciatella and pistachio. And it was lovely.
How is it that you could possibly go to Manhattan and not have visited every single pizza place?
You know what? You'd be surprised. First of all, there are some places I'll never get to because maybe they're in neighborhoods where I just never find myself, or maybe I've walked in and realized it wasn't the pizza for me and then walked out.
Yeah. Okay.
This is also new places, you know, new place opens. Right. I can't go right away.
God forbid this should ever happen. But if you just didn't have money coming in for a while, you could probably get by on pizza being offered to you and donated to you because of your work with so many of the pizza places.
Yeah, I've never been worried about being hungry. And that's part of why, I mean, like, I'm very aware of that fact, which is why, even though some of the work that I do is about doing pizza tours, I also have half of my existence is dedicated to Slice Out Hunger, which is the nonprofit that I run that does food insecurity prevention and relief through the pizza world. So even though I know that pizza is coming to me, right? From all angles, there's always pizza. Most people don't have that luxury.
Right. That's true. The offer that you couldn't refuse is always pizza related though, in your world, which is not so bad.
I have no complaints.
Well, so tell us a little bit about the foundation that you work with, the security and the slice of life, is it? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, it's called Slice Out Hunger. Sliceouthunger.org is the website. And we've been a 501c3 nonprofit since 2015. And we operate a network of pizza partners across the United States. It's over 700 pizza partners. Wow. So that's pizzerias, pizza makers, operators, managers, cheese companies, flour companies, tomato companies, distributors, and all they do is we activate them when there's some time of need. Mm-hmm. So if there's some way to use that network to raise money for anything, actually, we raised money for the victims of the wildfires on Maui and the Big Island.
Right, right.
We did a big campaign called, I think it was just called Pizza Relief Hawaiian Wildfires. And we had pizzerias across the country made Hawaiian pizzas, which of course is this like, you know, controversial pizza thing that, you know, barely is eaten in Hawaii. But that everybody looks at this thing as being this divisive pizza. But if we can have pizzerias sell it and donate a small percentage of the proceeds to this fund, then we sent, I think, about $40,000 to organizations, mostly on Maui, organizations that were cooking food for people who were affected.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a great thing you're doing there.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we did it for 2 months and we raised, it was $39,000 and change.
Wow, cool. That's amazing. How many people are on that board?
That's a 4-person board currently. Uh-huh. But we're looking to increase it. So if you know anybody who's interested.
What would that person who you'd want to increase the board with, what would he or she need to know or be able to do to help out?
The biggest thing that we look for are people with a positive energy, a strong network, and a network that does not cross over with the network that already exists with what we have on the board.
Right, right.
Those are really big.
Really big. Now, getting back to Hawaiian pizza for a second, does anyone ever use fresh pineapple on Hawaiian pizza? Or is it always a canned crop?
A lot of people use fresh, but yeah. I feel like the thing that gets in people's way is not necessarily whether it's canned or fresh, mm-hmm. but just the fact that chunks of pineapple on a pizza are not always everybody's favorite texture.
Right.
So when I make it, I will roast the pineapple and I'll sort of tear it apart like pulled pork. Mm-hmm. And then treat it. I like to treat it with a little bit of olive oil and honey. And then when it cooks in the oven, you really get this rich sweetness with this like hint of acidity that I accent by adding a little bit of lemon juice or lime juice mm-hmm. after the pizza comes out of the oven. Hit it with a little tiny bit of lime juice. So when you take a bite, you really get this savory, like really, I'm salivating just talking about it right now.
Right. And I'm going to need to get my bib here pretty soon.
Yeah, this is a mess. I need a slice. Oh, I do have a slice in the fridge. Maybe I'll eat that.
When do you not have pizza in the fridge?
It's very rare to not have pizza in the fridge.
I'm going to ask you a question that I'm hoping you've never been asked before about pizza.
Okay, but I'll just say that I don't remember the last time I got a question that I've never been asked before. So I'm excited.
I know. So it's like it's a throwdown from a time that you'll never remember. Okay. Why is pizza historically cooked in a circular shape, packaged in a square box, and then eaten in a triangular form?
Great question.
Have you been asked that before?
Many, many times, probably twice a week for the past 15 years. But it doesn't make it any worse. In fact, Matthew, it makes it a better question, the fact that so many people ask it.
Okay.
But wait, I've got a real answer for you. So first of all, let's start with the shape of the pizza. Pizzas come in all shapes, square, round, whatever. But historically, you're right, they're round. And that's because pizza's origin is as a product that's baked in bread bakeries as a method for reducing the temperature on the oven floor. And so what that means is you're flattening out dough and weighing it down with eventually tomato, cheese, pineapple, whatever. And that weight, that compression is what holds the dough against the floor of the oven, which allows the temperature to reduce. Now, those doughs that you're using in the bakery are dough balls, round doughs. And which means that they're round. So when you flatten them, they stay circular. The ovens that they were using at the time were round ovens. They were dome-shaped ovens. And so round pizzas fit very easily in round ovens. It makes a whole lot of sense why the early pizzas were round.
Okay. And the fact that they're packaged in a square box, is that just a practical kind of thing?
It's totally practical. Square pizza boxes ship flat. And when they ship flat, they it's much less expensive to ship a square pizza box than a molded round pizza box. Even though I have a collection of pizza boxes, right. I'm very into pizza boxes, and I have many round pizza boxes. So it's not that they don't exist. It's that they have not yet become a commercially viable product. Mm-hmm. That's why round pizzas are packaged in square boxes. Economical, they stack neatly. They also have nice airflow in the inside, because if you fill the whole box with pizza, there's a lot of steam. There's no little corners. So plenty of practical reasons why a square pizza box makes sense.
Perfect answer. I mean, I really thought that maybe we had one here for you, a question that you might not be able to get right away, but you just handled that. That was perfect.
Don't forget, there's the serving it in triangles part of the question.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, don't forget about that, because now this is really interesting. Pizzas in the mid-1700s, into the early 1800s, in southern Italy, on the streets of Naples, where pizza began, were very often sliced into wedges. And that's because the most equal way to divide a circle is into wedges.
Yeah.
And so if you didn't have enough money to buy the whole pizza, you could buy one slice. And that's the thing that we do in New York every day. I just did it 2 hours ago. But back in the day, in 18th century in Naples, you would have got one slice, you fold it in half with a little piece of paper, and you eat it. They call it eating a pizza al libretto, pizza like a book, folded in half.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Fold it up.
So that means when you're folding it up, it's crust on either exterior side instead of putting it in your mouth that way, with the toppings being up towards the roof of your mouth. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Open face works for some pizzas that are structurally sound, but in Naples and in New York, these are either weak bases or such a large pizza in New York's case that they're not structurally sound. So the fold is a method for conveyance while giving it structural integrity.
Gotcha. Now, I'm somebody who loves a crispy, crunchy crust. I don't like the bready and the doughy and the soft bread action. Is that something that is particular to myself, or is it something that maybe New Yorkers enjoy, the soft, and other cities or countries enjoy crisper, or how does that work?
You are not alone. There are many who like it crispy. But what that does mean is that you like a pizza that's baked at a lower temperature, so not a 900-degree oven. You want the 500, 550, 600-degree oven for a long bake, so not a one-minute bake. You might want an 8-minute bake or a 9-minute bake. And in New York's case, because we serve our pizzas by the slice, those slices get reheated in the oven. And it's akin to having a slice of bread or having a slice of toast. Mm-hmm. A slice of toast is a different food than a slice of bread, but it only requires a second application of heat, which takes it beyond just baking. Now you're drying the exterior, and that gives you a crunch.
So where do you fall on the crisp versus soft?
I don't have a specific textural profile that I prefer. Mm-hmm. I just like it to be well made, regardless of style. So that means I could very much like a soft, pillowy pizza if it's done correctly. I could very much love a crunchy pizza if it's made correctly.
For me, it's always been the whole pizza experience, and it's right up there with sex as to the two favorite things in the life, right? But for me, it's always been about what's the topping going to be, not what the style or the texture of the bread is going to be. Now, I know that probably pizza aficionados like yourself pays a lot of attention to the bread, to the foundation of a pizza. And then there are people like me who just like, you know, give me the sausage and the onion and the eggplant, the extra cheese and the gooey, greasy stuff that just drips down my arm. So tell me where you stand on that.
I prefer a pizza that's got a solid base and doesn't have to rely on the crutch of toppings. Now, that being said, a pizza with a bunch of toppings on it could be exquisite, but I do feel like a pizza with a great toppings and a terrible crust is a bad pizza. A pizza with a great crust and no toppings is a great pizza.
Isn't that just a piece of bread?
No, because dough with something on it, sauce and cheese, yeah. You know, just a simple pizza, even dough with tomato, garlic, oregano, and olive oil, which is a pizza marinara. That is one of the most exquisite pizzas if it's made correctly. And if it's made incorrectly, it's one of the worst.
Where do you fall on the San Marzano tomatoes, or can it just be any good tomato sauce, and whether or not the sauce needs to be cooked or whether it's not cooked?
What a layered question, and I love it, Matthew. First of all, I am not a member of the San Marzano Appreciation Society. Not to say that I don't like them. It's just that I don't abide by their rule. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that San Marzano tomato is the best, and that's the gold standard. But I
get into the kitchen one day.
Yeah, let's do it.
Scott, have you ever
been? Visit.
Oh, that sounds great. Have you ever been to any of the, is it two or three Michelin starred pizza joints?
There are no Michelin starred pizzerias.
I thought that there was one in Tokyo, and no. I thought there was one in San Bonifacio.
There are no Michelin starred pizzerias.
Okay.
In fact, there's a great documentary about it on, I think it's on Amazon right now.
Uh-huh.
It's called Stella.
Stella.
And it's a documentary about one pizzeria in Naples and its search for a Michelin star. And the spoiler alert I have to give here is
okay,
because it doesn't get a Michelin star. But anyway, it's an interesting story. Full disclosure, I'm interviewed in the documentary. So they sent me a link to it a couple of months ago when I went online. But yeah, it's all about how there's no pizzeria that has a Michelin star. And that won't, I judge pizza competitions pretty regularly, but I can still enjoy flawed pizza, because a technical flaw does not mean that it's something that isn't allowed to tug at your heartstrings.
Right. Because deliciousness is all about what you think is delicious.
That's what I think. I mean, well, what's some good pizza that you've had in Honolulu?
Nothing that compares.
Compares to what?
To the East Coast and places around the country that I've been to.
This is an interesting thing you bring up. Mm-hmm. When I'm in Honolulu, I don't want it to compare to the East Coast of the U.S. I'm in Honolulu. I want it to be its own thing. So
right.
I was at a farmer's market, and I went to there was a pizza shop called Fatto a Mano.
Uh-huh.
And it was delicious, excellent pizza that if it was in New York, people would talk about it because it's just an excellent, well-made pizza.
Yeah.
But it's in Honolulu. And so people, they want to compare it with something in New York, which is really hard to do because the last time maybe that person was in New York could have been 12 years ago. I still really love it. Wherever they're getting the fish from, whenever I'm in Honolulu, that's all I want.
Oh, paka paka is a really, really popular fish here. And that's a pink snapper.
Mm.
Yeah. So is there any acceptable pizza that's done by any of the major chains?
Acceptable? I think any pizza can be acceptable if you're desperate enough.
Well, it sounds so diplomatic.
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, I don't interact with a lot of chain pizza because it's not a part of my life. I live in New York, which is not to say that we don't have chains. Of course we do. But I live here, which means there's great pizza everywhere. And it's also my career, I guess you could say, that I eat great pizza every day.
Right.
It's built in. So there's never, I don't get home and then say, oh, let's just unwind. It's Friday night. Let's just order a pizza. It doesn't happen because it's just, I mean, I literally ate a pizza 2 hours and 12 minutes ago.
So you're always kind of in that been there, done that thing with the pizza world and pizza flavor inside your face.
Well, there's a lot of been there, done that, but there's also a lot of, oh, well, what's next? And what's lurking around this corner? That's why I just told you I was running late. I was on my way to the train to come back to sign on to talk to you. And I said, I want to go to this place. Do I have 6 minutes? And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. and you know, had a slice. It's just what happens.
Do you have a favorite 1-2 punch as far as toppings? I mean, besides the tomato and the cheese, which goes on everything for the most part, what two topping ingredients would you want to include in your pizza just for you?
Amazing question. And a question that no one's ever asked me. There you go, Matthew. You win.
I did it.
Okay.
I just want to compete. I don't need to win. I just want to compete.
I just want to be a contender. Sausage and garlic.
Fresh garlic.
It's a 1-2 punch that I love. Red onion and sausage is a great 1-2 punch. I mean, the sausage is probably my favorite meat topping.
Same here.
It's great. But then lately, I've been so into red onions.
Because they're extra delicious sweetness.
Yeah, like when you cook them, they've got a little bit of crunch and they're different. They're, you know, like the white onion is, it feels almost like a punishment sometimes, a white onion on a pizza.
It can be
harsh. A red onion is exciting.
Right. A good red onion. I mean, that when you talk about a good red onion, you bring me back to the days when I grew up on Syosset.
Oh, right. Long Island.
So we'd have we'd have the bagels and the schmear and the lox and the red onion and the whole bit. So, you know, and so that's something that is very near and dear to me. Now, when I want to have a bagel, I have the cream cheese and the onion and the tomato. No bread.
Yeah. It makes me a little sad, but I don't want to project that onto you. My sadness is my own responsibility.
Oh, yeah. You know, we can share.
But a bagel with cream cheese, lox, slice of tomato and some red onion and maybe a couple of capers here and there.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. There's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it. I would pass up almost anything, even king crab, for that kind of a layout and spread.
Did you make your own bagels?
No, I never did.
And now you're off the carbohydrates. So.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, you know, around the holidays, I'm pretty much super strict 9 months a year. And then I go to hell for 3 months and I just do everything and anything.
Oh, don't punish yourself for enjoying life. Don't punish yourself. You're looking great.
Thanks,
you're looking even better than last time I saw you.
Yeah. How do you like that? Much healthier, feeling better than ever. And that's a big thing with what I'm doing now. I'm helping people get off their meds and reverse diabetes and get their metabolic health together and live a longer, healthier life. So that's important to me, even though I'm still the food guy.
Yeah.
You know? Great. Yeah.
A lot of food out there. There's more than just bread.
For you, Scott, when you're not doing your thing out on the streets, at what time during the day would pizza be at its most glorious?
Another question that I've never been asked.
Oh, I'm rocking it here.
This is great. At what time is pizza at its most glorious? I think it's middle of the afternoon.
Yeah. Do you tell?
Before the sun has set. It's before dinner, because this is not dinner. Getting a slice is like a little snack. And I think sometimes there's that moment where you need to take a coffee break. You know, and that slice break does exactly that same thing.
So you get a little bit of a buzz then for when you're like walking down the street and it's like the afternoon. It's like you feel a little like you feel like something, but you don't want coffee because pizza's there.
Yeah, I think mid afternoon is like is a great time for pizza. I know a lot of people would say late night, but late night is when it's a solution to a problem. Middle of the afternoon is when it's just a source of joy.
Very well put. Now, you are one of the very highest pizza gods in the world. So I'm going to ask you this next question without coloring the question. Do you eat cold pizza ever?
Yes.
Oh!
Often.
Wow. Why? Yeah.
Why not? I mean, if I have a leftover slice and I don't have time to reheat it, and it's the right type of like a thicker pizza, I would rather eat that cold.
So you don't find a diminution of flavor when something that is at its best hot when eaten cold?
It's a different food. It's just, I had the hot version of it yesterday. Today, I'm going to mix things up. I'm going to have the cold version.
And is it going to be good?
Different food. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I like a cold pizza with hot sauce on it.
Cold pizza with hot sauce. Like after the fact, you whip up a little bit of hot sauce, put it over your cold pizza and go for it?
Yeah. Oh, let me grab a slice. Oh, I got 4 minutes before I got to leave. Grab a slice out of the fridge. Put a little bit of Cholula on there. Frank's Red Hot, whatever. Done.
So you're a chili crisp guy too, then, is what you're saying.
Sometimes chili crisp. It depends on the pie. More likely, Frank's Red Hot or Cholula.
Okay. I'll have to send you a couple of interesting hot sauces for you to try. You'll let me know what you think.
I would love to. I love hot sauces. I'm not athletic about it. I don't go for super hot, but I like flavor.
Right. Of course, you know, it's all about the flavor, right?
That's what I think.
Yeah. As far as the doughs go, how would you rate them, and what would be the primary difference in the flours that are used, and the style, and the amount of yeast that might be included, and the sitting, the resting, the fermenting, all of the stuff that goes into making a great bread?
It's an interesting thought, because I love that you said going into making a great bread, because thinking about pizza as a type of bread, I think, helps the brain work. And thinking about a dough recipe, not as a recipe, but as a formula, also helps, because there are not just five different types of doughs out there. There are infinite doughs.
Right.
Because flour, water, yeast and salt are the basic four elements of a pizza.
True.
But you just said it. The amount of yeast will change everything. The temperature of your water will change everything. The type of flour that you use will change everything. And that's why if you understand what each one of those things will do, what that slider does, if you understand those parameters, then you can tweak. You can say, you know what? I'm going to make this pizza on a baking sheet. No pizza stone tonight, which means I'm going to have to make my dough differently. And so I'm going to make these changes X, Y, Z, and that's going to get me the outcome I want.
Are you using parchment paper when you're not putting it straight on a stone?
I'm usually not using any parchment paper because I like, you said when not putting it on a stone. So I like pizza baked on a baking sheet with just a little bit of oil or some butter. And that's it. I don't need the parchment paper because it should free off the tray, no problem.
Mm-hmm. You like the deep dish kind of greasy, crunchy, oily kind of crusts that are available?
I love it. I mean, listen, I think that a well-executed pizza is a good pizza. And if you have a thick crusted pizza and it's dense and undercooked and greasy, that's a poorly made pizza.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Some people might love it. They may, you know, it's like I said before, it could be technically flawed, but emotionally fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. You notice that in most Italian restaurants, to their detriment, who use red pepper flakes are all using that same prepackaged, mass-produced red pepper flakes instead of actually using real peppers from different locations that have been dried in a dehydrator in their kitchen or roasted or pan roasted. You know,
it's what funny I'm saying? That you say that. I know exactly what you're saying, because there is a movement right now of small companies making small batch, good, high quality crushed pepper flakes.
Right.
And there's a company called Crushin' that's very good. And there's one called Flatiron Pepper Company. That's probably my favorite, from Boulder, Colorado. And they make excellent, delicious pepper flakes.
I'm going to have to look them up, because that's definitely one of my little pet peeves. I have 1,000 of them. When you go into a place and they give you the red pepper, it's the same red pepper that it's sold everywhere. It's offered everywhere. No one's taking any pride in their peppers.
No, and I understand that, because it's, your customers aren't paying you for them.
Right.
So they're always those stale, leathery kind of, I tell you, Flatiron Pepper Company is super high quality. It's like I carry them with me on every tour.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. So do you dose up your slices with your own little side flavorings and condiments?
Sometimes I do. It depends on the slice. Sometimes I just want a little change. Yeah. So lately I've been carrying around these smoky pepper flakes. They've got some habanero peppers and ancho chilies. And, and it just gives you that, just a little bit gives you this great smokiness. You know what? They're really, really good in scrambled eggs with sliced avocado.
Yeah, I use a lot of chili crunches. I make my own. And we have, I have tons of packages of chilies from all over the world. So yeah, they come in real handy, for especially for people who like a little bit of pizzazz, but with flavor.
Yeah, I love
that. You know? So you've become a real home style cook over the years. You don't have any formal training, and yet you love to cook.
Exactly. I mean, I've done some training, but I would call it semi-formal. I did recently did a one-day training in Brooklyn, and then I did, maybe 5 years ago, I did a five-day training at a facility in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, those are little courses. That's not the same as, really the only training you can do as a pizza maker is just making a ton of pizza.
Right.
And I've never been in a restaurant where I was making 200 pizzas a night for 5 years straight.
You know, the competitive food competitions that they have on TV that has gotten so far away from cooking and much more into brutalizing each other. They always show the guys spinning the dough. Is that something that's just for show? Or do you think that actually makes any sort of improvement on the product?
It's totally for show. There is no improvement on the product, but it looks cool.
Right. You know, speaking of that, when it comes to food shows, I'm sure you've been watching them as long as I have or close to it. Back in the day, food shows were about cooking and about learning and about educating. Now it's about, you know, competing against people or eating to excess. And it's like so far away, so divergent from where it once was and what it still should be.
Well, people got bored by just watching food being cooked. I didn't. I love that. But, you know, now everybody wants a reality show. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to see, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, stick around after these ads. I understand it. I'm not a fan of it, even though I've competed on one of those cooking shows.
Uh-huh.
I which didn't make me like it anymore. It's just that I get it. I get why people like watching the drama.
It's sort of akin to the rubbernecking. People can't keep themselves from looking at the train wreck.
It's true. And great.
Who do you like on YouTube who's doing a lot of food-related content?
There's a guy called, I think it's Adam Ragusa, who does some really good
Ragusa
stuff.
Ragusa, yeah, he's great.
Ragusa. And then there's Joshua Wiseman,
right,
who does a lot of, and then Kenji Lopez Alt.
Right.
Yeah, I love them.
Have you ever watched Tasting History with Max Miller?
No.
Oh my gosh. He was on the show recently. He's amazing because he goes into the deep, dark history of foods and the cultures, and then he actually creates a recipe while giving you a little story about the history of that particular dish.
I am so excited to check this out. I've never seen it.
And he's just recently over 2 million subs, so there are lots of people who like that guy. And he was just amazing. He was great fun, you know, interview, and I just love watching his show.
Wow, this is great. Okay, I'm going to watch this.
Good. I love to turn people on to the stuff that I really like.
Oh, this is very, very cool.
Tasting History.
I wonder if he's done some pizza stuff. You know, I'll look it up later.
Yeah. Controversial question, Scott. What is the perfect beverage for a slice of pie?
Wow. Depends on the pizza. Can you do me this great honor of describing to me the pizza, and I will tell you what I would pair with it.
Wow. Well, let's just take the traditional New York style, since you are, you know, Scott's Pizza Tours from New York. So the traditional pizza slice.
Coke.
Oh, Coke or Oak?
Coke. Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Crispy fountain Coca-Cola, crushed ice, straw, white straw with the blue and the yellow and the pink stripe or whatever. That's what I want with my slice.
Okay. And What other type of pizza might lend itself to another beverage, and what would that beverage be?
Wow. Well, for Neapolitan pizza, it's a lot more delicate in flavor. There are fewer flavors, but they're all more distinct. I would do something light and gentle, and maybe something that it cannot interfere with my palate. I would do Prosecco.
Oh, a little bit of the sweet bubbles?
I would do a dry Prosecco.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, because I really love that with something that where I want to taste olive oil. I think Prosecco is really nice.
Right. I've always been like unforgiving root beer guy with pizza.
Now, root beer is my favorite with a sausage pizza. Uh-huh. If you're giving me a sausage and garlic pizza with some red onion on it, you know, like toppings, that's when I'm doing root beer. Because if I did root beer with a delicate pizza, it would throw everything off. Couldn't do it.
See, I've always been unwavering in my root beer with pizza thing, but I can see the nuance that you're talking about, depending on the flavors. That's how you pair wine with food. It's not about the food itself. It's about the flavor of the food.
Absolutely. Yes. We were talking about fish before. Every fish is different. They have different flavor and texture, different ways of cooking and eating. So you can't just say, oh, white wine goes better with fish.
Exactly. It's like, what kind of a sauce or spices are used on that dish? Then I'll decide what kind of wine I'll have.
And we do tours all the time that are wine pairing pizza tours where we serve pizza and a specific wine. And there are some wines that we never do. Like, I never serve Chianti. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of boring.
And a little bit overblown. It's like, you know, it's almost like a throwaway, right?
Pinot Noir, I don't really mess with for pizza. Uh-huh. You know, there are all these wines that I just, unless we really find a great one, but like Nero d'Avola, if it's the right pizza, like a pepperoni pizza where I want a little bit of a zest and a kick, or Primitivo, you know, like I like sharp reds like that are still light or medium bodied. No full-bodied reds with my pizza.
Nice. Yeah, that totally makes sense. It would be overpowering, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And too astringent.
Exactly. Although there is a wine we've been drinking a lot on tours that's a red wine that's lightly effervescent from southern Italy. So not a Lambrusco, but similar. And it's called Grugnano. And I've been in love with it.
Oh, that sounds good.
I have a couple bottles right here. I should probably pop one of them tonight.
Are they a pretty young wine?
It's a young wine. So that's why I'm like, how long have I had these bottles? I got to drink them.
I think it's time, Scott.
You can't let it. They don't get better with age. Some of these wines, you know, you got to just drink them.
Exactly. And how good are you going to be with wine sitting on the shelf and not in your mouth?
Exactly. Come on. All right. Done.
Tonight I can tell. They're within arm's reach, aren't they?
Well, not my arms, but... And look, I live in a New York apartment. They're not large, but it's on the other end of the apartment. I can see the bottle.
Way out yonder.
Exactly. I know. Most New York apartments, you can reach, you know, you're standing right next to the toilet when you're, you know, you can reach the stove and you can like reach your refrigerator.
You know, it's funny when I ask most people about the perfect beverage with pizza, beer is always brought up. So I'm really, really delighted that you did not bring that up. And then, I think that is like the primary response. And then I say root beer and they go, oh, okay.
With the right pizza, root beer is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I can definitely see your wine thing. That's a really good, that's a good way to do it too, especially because the way you give tours, which is so hands-on and high touch, that people won't feel intimidated by having the wine being included in the tour.
And those are really fun because we don't give people an option. We don't say which wine would you like to order? No, we are serving you a wine that goes with this pizza.
Right, right. That's the way to do it because otherwise it'd be a bunch of babbling brooks.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's like, okay, so you want to drink. Also, a lot of people on the tours might not know one wine from the next. So they see the name that they know and they pick that. I would rather serve them something. And then they say, oh, what is this? And I'll say, oh, it's Falanghina. Mm-hmm. It's from Campania. It's a white wine. It's a little mineral. Like, and let them know. And then they say, oh, let me write that down. You're giving me a new wine I can drink.
that's great.
Great.
I think that's how a lot of that gets across, and people learn about wines by having someone tell them who they trust.
That's exactly it.
And they get out of their comfort zone. They go, hey, that's not so bad.
That's why I don't like going, when I go to a restaurant and I order, I always ask a lot of questions to the server, which are probably annoying, but I don't want to order the thing that I would have automatically ordered. Usually and that's why I don't like to, I want to go out to dinner with five other people and I want to order a bunch of dishes and we all try all of them.
Right. No, that's definitely the way to go. How has New York changed since the COVID shit show, as far as the food and the people on the street and the prices and all of the important things about life?
All of the, it's gotten more expensive and everything. There's been this kind of 2-3 year gap where we didn't notice a lot of these changes. And then now we're really noticing the changes. Some of these restaurants have gone out or they've had to make massive tweaks to so that they could survive. And so now the restaurants that we have are, some of them are just different versions of the same restaurant that we had before.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed while watching your career for this past 12 years or something is that you've really expanded. So you're not only doing the wine tour, and you're obviously not doing all the tours either. What other tours are you doing, and what are the people like? Because, you know, as a food tour operator, a former food tour operator myself, you know, it comes down to the face-to-face, high-touch personality stuff, because 10 years after the fact, I might not remember exactly where you took me or what I ate other than pizza, but I'll remember how you made me feel. And I'm sure you get that too.
Well, it's a great point, because I try to tell my guides that that's our mission anyway. Number one, we want people to have a great time. And number two is, if that happens by understanding more about pizza, then that's special. And it doesn't matter so much to me that they memorize every detail we say, or that they remember that these are the three pizzerias that they want to go to next time they visit. Maybe that's the case, but it's more important that they understand and they learn from the experience. So we do only pizza education. That's all we do. Pizza tours, online pizza making classes, pizza research and development trips for professionals, pizza field trips for students. So everything we do is pizza, but the expansion has been more about going vertical and not about horizontal.
Right.
So we haven't added the deli tour or the bagel tour. We're not going to add any of the taco tour. It's pizza is our specialty. That's what we do.
Stick to your specialty.
Yeah. Because then you get more depth. If all my guides had to learn about tacos and sandwiches, they wouldn't know as much about pizza. I want us to know as much as possible about pizza.
I'm wondering how many people who are in your employ, whether now or in the past, who didn't eat pizza, but were awesome tour guides.
I don't know if I've ever hired anybody who I knew did not really like pizza, because that's it's a pretty strong prerequisite. I have hired people who were not trained tour guides.
Uh-huh.
And that's really important. I don't love hiring people who are trained tour guides, because very often they're just trained in spewing information and not in listening. And they know how to deal with a public hop on, hop off bus, but they don't know how to connect with 12 people.
Yeah. It's interesting. The reason I asked you that question was because in the 16 years that I was running Hawaii food tours, I had several of my employees along the way who were vegan or vegetarian and didn't eat a whole lot of the foods that we have here in Hawaii, because, you know, some of it's pretty obscure. And they were some of the best tour guides ever, because It wasn't about them eating. It was about them explaining the nuance, the history, the culture, and all of that. So I just wondered if there was any kind of similarities with your people.
It's funny, because our tours are modular, so the tour guide chooses where they want to take the group. It's not scripted out. It's not prescribed by me. So if Paul tells me that he doesn't like such and such pizzeria, I don't even have to know. He doesn't have to take people there. he takes people to the place he connects with. So even though we don't have a similar situation where somebody's gluten-free, yet they run a great tour, they might not love a couple of stops. And while they don't have to go there, they're not stops on Paul's tour.
Yep. Interesting. We would always get people who would ask for vegetarian tours or vegan tours or gluten-free tours. And I said, this is Hawaii food tours. We can't do that kind of a tour if we're going to be showing off the foods of Hawaii. So, you find yourself not being in a box, but like just doing and sticking to your specialties. And so that's what I admire about what you're doing.
Well, I also think it's really powerful to be able to say no. Well, we don't do a vegan version. We don't do this. With the pizza tour, we have once a year, we run a vegan tour. Once a year, we run a gluten-free tour. You know, they happen once. They're like little one-off things.
Is that because you don't want to get canceled? So you have to include one
time? No.
Just kidding.
No. So for January, it's Veganuary. And so we partnered up with a vegan tour company and just kind of for fun. I don't think we made any money, but we said, let's team up and do a tour together. And we run it together. And I talk about pizza and she talks about vegan food. And I'm doing the same kind of thing in May for Celiac Awareness Month for a gluten-free tour.
Right.
And then when it comes to, I think it's June, we're going to have for National Pepperoni Pizza Day, we're going to do a pepperoni tour that's going to be kind of supported by some pepperoni companies who are going to give us information and we can give us handouts. You'll really learn a lot about pepperoni that day.
Oh, yeah.
But besides that, we don't do pepperoni on any pizza tour.
Oh, is that right? It's not included in any of these slices.
No, we do cheese pizza. That's all. You don't get a choice. We do cheese pizza because if it's not good at cheese pizza, it's not going to be good as pepperoni.
There is something really though spectacular about the little way that the pepperonis kind of cup up and then that pepperoni juice, that liqueur, that's pretty gorgeous stuff.
We're going to be talking a lot about that because that's a different type of pepperoni. That's the original pepperoni from the early 1900s and how we've gotten used to the flat kind. So now the rediscovery of the cupping pepperoni, it feels like it's brand new.
Yeah.
And it's more expensive. And that's why all these places that do a ton of pepperoni on the pizza, you're paying $38 for a pepperoni pizza.
Oh, yeah. And the prices have gone up, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. As they kind of should, because, you know, they were paying $17 a bag of flour 8 years ago, and now they're paying $36.
What haven't I asked you that you want to share with the audience about pizza or about Scott or about your personal life or your world or your travel or your kids or your, you know, have you Googled yourself recently? I mean, tell us something different.
I have not Googled myself recently. You've covered so much ground, but I mean, there's infinite things to talk about just because, you know, pizza touches so many things. It's like this impossible thing. I will say this. I mean, you asked me about, you know, what are things that are going on besides all that? I have this team of pizza tour guides. There's 9 of us, and it's been really thrilling to see. I've upped the training over the past year because we had a baby almost 10 months ago.
Wow. Great.
And so that meant that I had to prepare the company to be able to handle me not being around quite as much. Mm-hmm. So that's why I really upped the education. We've been doing all these field trips where I take everybody to check out pizzerias or learn about cheese or tomatoes. And it's been really, really fun. And it's really enhanced all of our tours.
Tell us about the daddy energy of having a new baby.
It's interesting because it doesn't feel much different from my existence before. Just in the sense of course, you know, like there's a lot more time I'm spending concentrating on another person. There's parts of the day where between 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock, I am booked every day with her. And, but it's been really fun to watch the things that matter or don't matter to a tiny baby.
Yeah.
And you and I sit here and talk about the meaning of pizza and what's the beverage and all these things that we can get lost in because we are entertained by discussions about food. She could not care less. Mm-hmm. She's throwing the broccoli on the floor and she likes seeing that when she throws it, that it lands on the floor.
Right. But Scott, it is broccoli.
That's why I encourage it. Where do you think she learned it?
Toss it off the plate.
Watch daddy. And I throw it on the floor.
Slam dunk.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I kind of like that.
Oh, that's
cute. I'll get in trouble if that word gets out.
What's her name?
She's Shelby.
Shelby. Wow. That's great. That's really sweet. And this is your first?
First, yeah.
Wow. Congratulations, man. Mazel tov.
Thank you. She's pretty amazing. And actually, I have to head out a couple minutes to go and pick her up. And it's funny, every day when I go pick her up, I think about, oh, do I have enough time that I can swing by the slice shop and grab a slice? Ooh. And today might be the day that it actually happens, because after talking about this with you and all the topping combinations and everything that you like, now I'm like, I really just want to get a slice. And I just had one a couple hours ago, but this is a different place. I want their slice.
And you keep such a svelte figure, which is amazing.
Well, I bike everywhere.
Right.
If I don't bike, I'm in trouble. But, you know, if I bike 20 miles in a day, then it helps even things out.
You earned yourself a few slices when you do that.
That's what I think.
You know what I love? The way that you close out all your emails, the way that you sign off, you write yours in pizza. And I love that. And then last night in bed, I'm talking to Lynn. And I said, you know, I'm going to bring this up to Scott and see if he can roll with this. I thought, could I improve upon that? It would be difficult to improve upon yours in pizza. And I thought, how about yours on pizza?
I love that. You've become a topic. So I got to tell you what inspired me to sign off my emails like that is there's a friend of mine and the great pizza thinker, writer, pizza maker called Adam Kuban. He always signed his emails Hasta la pizza. And I thought, that's cool. I really like that. And I figured, okay, I can come up with my own little version. And then I decided, because everything that I'm conveying to people, everything that I'm communicating is through that lens of pizza. That's right. Where I went. And, you know, signing off emails or letters or anything is always so awkward.
Right.
Yours and pizza, because that's sort of where I'm coming from. Maybe I've responded to your email about, do you have a tour next Thursday? And maybe I say, oh, well, we only do tours on this day and blah, blah, blah. Here's a link to our da, 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 da. And then they're like, okay. But yours and pizza, they see that the thing that I am in service to is the pizza.
Right. Would you consider changing in to on, or would that still, that would not work?
I will consider it, and I'm going to try it on for my next couple of emails, or maybe in the next couple of days.
Conjures up some interesting thoughts.
I just wonder if are people going to read that and like picture me just splayed out on a pizza? I don't know if I want that.
Any publicity is good publicity.
You know what? When I email you, you're going to get yours on pizza.
I love it, man. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's great to see you. It's been 12 years, I think, since we last saw each other.
And, bonkers.
You know, you look fantastic. And I'm so glad that your success has just continued to rise meteorically. Really great, Scott.
You look great. I'm going to visit you next time I'm in Honolulu.
Fantastic.
We'll go on a non-vegan, non-gluten-free Hawaiian food tour.
With plenty of carbs. I'll take you.
Yeah. Oh, you just have to eat one carb.
No problem. I mean, that might actually be a problem. One carb.
Yeah. Ooh.
Well, really great once again spending time with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's a blast.
And we're going to say aloha to you for right now, Scott. Thanks so much.
Aloha.